Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Art of Relationships show. I'm your host, as always, Greg. And I have a special guest today, Malia Scott, also sex therapist, relationship specialist. She's in Texas. I'm going to be bringing her on in a little bit. And we're going to have fun today talking about love, sex, and let's face it, relationships and everything in between. Okay, so hold tight. Join the chat down below. And you'll be able to ask your questions, you name it, comments, everything else, okay? And we're going to kick it off right after this. Don't go anywhere. Hey, welcome back. I'm going to bring Malia on, Scott in Texas, and we're going to have some fun talking about love, sex, and everything in between with relationships, even dating, marriage, right? Is there a huge difference between, let's face it, being engaged and being married? We'll get into this stuff, so don't go anywhere. Make sure you throw your comments and chats down below, and I'm going to bring on Malia right now. Hey, Malia. Hey, welcome. Can we hear you?
How's it going?
Cool. Can we hear you? Can you, you might have to speak up maybe a little bit so people can hear you. And I got the chat. So talking about, tell people about you, what you have going on and maybe what your specialty is. You know, people know, I already said, you know, you're a sex therapist as well, relationship specialist, you know, we do the same type of work. But where do you focus on?
Yeah, sure. So I just recently got my associate's license in Texas, and I am in the process of finishing my sex therapy certification through Sexual Health Alliance. And so everything's a work in progress. Just getting started on launching a new private practice called Rewilding Relationships. And I focus on working with individuals and couples in the realm of relationship therapy, sex therapy, even relational trauma therapy. Awesome. I also work with a narcissistic abuse recovery, because that is another narcissistic abuse recovery. It's a big thing that's happening in our world. And it's traumatic when it comes to relationships, and it's hard to recover from that. So
It's very hard. And what is your view? Maybe we'll jump right in on that. What is your view on, and I don't want to kill business for you. No. And I look at your view on everybody, maybe in the Midwest, Detroit, I don't know, you know, in Texas or out West too much. You know, I try to talk to, you know, Justin Lee Miller, David, you know, David Lay, and, you know, a bunch of other people that I think, you know, as well. And looking at, and I throw out, narcissistic. I tell people, seems like the word narcissistic gets thrown out there like it's freaking water, you know? And there's a huge difference between someone that might act arrogant and a true bona fide narcissistic attitude. And like in a relationship, what do you see and how do you help? Do you primarily work with females? Yeah, thank you. I love it. Because everybody assumes it's all men when they heard narcissistic. Oh, hell no. Right? So what is the first sign to be able to help people or that you do in the recovery, the, you know, narcissistic abuse recovery? And how do you differentiate that between maybe, I hate to use regular abuse or trauma, you know? How do you differentiate? I know they're tough questions.
I'm going to kind of compartmentalize, but kind of like organize that real quick. So when working with somebody that is on the other side of it, they've gotten out of the relationship, which is one of the hardest parts. That can be one of the hardest parts is we're working with regulating nervous system. We're working with asserting boundaries. We're working with how to notice the red flags, even in like if someone's going to start dating again, what to look for. Those are really important pieces. And also, like reevaluating relationship values.
Nice. Now,
so those are just like four key points that I would work on those areas with somebody that's in the recovery process.
No, that is cool when it comes down. And you talk about the nervous system and talking about, you know, what do you cover with the nervous system? Do you talk about triggers? Do you talk about, you know, because some people could be, I'm huge on feelings and emotions. I don't know if you watched any of my stuff, but if you haven't, shame on, no, I'm teasing. But no, looking at, I'm teasing, you. But looking at, I'm huge on emotion and I'm huge on purpose, you know, and I tell, you know, you feel what you feel, but what you do with that, that is, you know, how you react to it. That's on us. But mm-hmm. when you talk about the nervous system, how do you try to help people with align the nervous system versus a perception that's not accurate versus past triggers?
Mm. Okay. So I would approach that first with working with somebody on identifying what their triggers are.
Cool.
And then discerning if that is coming from a past trigger or if that is, you know, with emotional abuse, your brain can be affected and that you're constantly going back and forth. And there's a lot of confusion.
Is it real? Is it not? Am I, you know, it's great with the bona fide true narcissist. Like I said, not everybody out there that's called a narcissist is a true identified clinically narcissist.
Right.
And, you know, they play with you where you don't know, as you know, they don't know if you're coming or going, or they get you to start. You're not only second guessing yourself, you're third, fourth, fifth, sixth time guessing yourself. Is this really right? Is this, so it's hard to, and that's why I say when somebody, a new dating, like you mentioned, after this dating, the person could be doing something, you know, and it triggers the other person and they're not narcissistic. Their intentions are great.
And that's one of the hardest parts.
That's what the nervous system, how do you discern with, I know how I do it, but I want to hear how do you discern and get them to know that, okay, this is not the past and this person is not trying to manipulate you. And it's hard. You know that.
And I'll do this. I'll be the first to say, advocate working with a relational therapist that is trained in trauma is helpful in that recovery process, and also trigger identification. And there's a place in the, once you get out of that relationship, you've got to like rewire yourself. You have got to get some skills. And that's why I say and advocate to work with somebody who has those skills that you can learn from and build what I call like your toolbox, your life toolbox. You just keep adding tools to it.
It's huge. And one thing I don't know if you do the same. I with clients in those situations, and you might not know this, and some, you know, a lot of probably listeners don't, or viewers. I have a lot of experience. I also specialized in severe trauma, sexual trauma, with kids and teens, you know, that type of stuff. Mom would be literally pimping out her 10, 11 year old daughter, stuff like that. So it's ironic how those triggers and they flare up and you got to look at the actions. You know, we know this, that person's saying this, but are their actions doing something else? Yeah. And they're so smooth, men and women, at getting people to join them into like against you. Oh yeah, they're crazy. They're crazy. And they're trying to build that alliance. And it's hard to trust that person, that new person that you're dating. And it could be a great person, end up being a great, healthy relationship. Mm-hmm. And what is happening to get the nervous system to calm down a little bit, you know, and the limbic system, whatever, to calm down, to realize, hey, you know what? They are doing this. And to get the survivors, if you will, to not be triggered so much. So what is your key element and how do you help them to calm down and settle down and look at, if you want to say, the reality?
You said it right.
Not the perceived reality.
You said it right there. So definitely coming up with a list. And it's interesting because I'm leading a group right now. I have an app that I created for narcissistic abuse recovery.
And really?
Yeah. I'll send you the link later. But
we'll have to talk about all that.
But one of the exercises in there is like a reality. It's a reality. You make your own reality list. What is the behavior you are experiencing versus going into the potential or the memory, the good memories, right? So yes. Being able to discern the two, like, oh, that memory happened, but oh, this is how my partner is actually acting and behaving. So you can go back to that list and live in the now and live in the reality, because that is where you are. And that's so important. And it's like in assertiveness training and learning how to create healthy boundaries is essential. So there's a lot of therapy part of it, but there's also this solution focused approach.
Yes.
Which is where I also do the coaching side of things, because there needs to be homework. There needs to be implementation and integration. And then there needs
to be practice.
And then there needs to be a
practice. Yes.
That's the only way we can like rewire and create new healthy patterns.
Absolutely. It's funny because one thing I tell people a lot, you know, with, you know, trauma recovery, abuse, you know, emotional, physical combo, I call it a combo, abuse trauma type situation, is that person, if they don't care how you're feeling, that's a huge sign. That's a red flag to me to say, hey, what's going on? But you're crazy. You shouldn't feel that way. And they try to mind fuck you, if you will. What you feel is crazy. It's not right. It's not legit. And I tell you, feel what you feel, but it could be based on a perception that's not accurate. But does that person care enough to go after, hey, why are you feeling this way? If you're mad, what's going on? And it's so hard because you don't even trust yourself, your judgment anymore. When you get out of that situation, and Malia, you mentioned it, it's perfect. That is the hardest place, I think, to get out of that situation.
And that's what makes the mind scramble, is being gaslit over a course of time. You don't trust yourself. You don't trust your own judgment. That's essential to work with somebody that is trained in this and that can like mirror them and see and reassure them that, you know,
it's okay to feel this way.
Isn't happening.
Right. Right. And it's so hard because you know that you don't trust yourself. You don't trust your own, and that, you know, your gut instinct, you know, and you to buy into that, and to not only buy into it, but it's there for a reason, I tell people. And, you know, the gut instinct, even with, you know, with kids and teens, you know, even, you know, sexual abuse, coercive, whatever, your gut's telling you something is wrong, something isn't right, but something still might feel pleasurable. So it's that mind trick that goes back and forth to be able to look at, you know what, is this on my terms or is it on everybody else's terms?
Well, and that's why it's so hard to break this cycle of abuse, because you've got that cocktail in your brain that's probably as addictive as heroin to break.
Yes.
And that's what's happened. That's why I think it's so important to bring in like the neuroscience of it, and really to be able to understand your brain when you're in that toxic cycle of abuse. You basically have to find other ways to redirect so you can like repattern your brain
and get used to that. And I agree. And I tell, and you know what Malia is saying, you don't have to have a degree in neuroscience. You don't have to have a degree in brain surgery, whatever, but it's just looking at, you know, I call it, you know, the animal brain, or people, I might be dating myself from the water boy, right? The reptilian brain, the limbic system, amygdala. And, you know, look, it's the fight, flight, or freeze. let's be real. That's what it is. You know, simplify it. Everybody knows that. Everybody's heard that. And it's about differentiate. Hey, why do I want to, am I in danger? Am I scared? Am I whatever? Am I triggered? And you just cower and give in. Oh, I'm going to have sex, even though I don't want to, because I don't want to make that person mad or yell at me. And it's about learning self-respect and self-love again, mm-hmm. or maybe learning it for the first time.
Mm-hmm. And then I'm in several Facebook groups for narcissist abuse and whatever. And like, I just started to, I don't know if this is my nature, but I love to investigate and research. But I started, once this light turned on, I started doing this research and I started getting on Instagram. I started to get on YouTube. I started to see how rampant this is, not just in our country, but in our world.
Oh, in our world. In Texas, you have a diverse population too. Here in Metro Detroit, we have huge. I was telling Malia, most people know, most of my clients are people of color, you know, black, like 85%. But I see, you know, in Metro Detroit, it's the largest population of Middle Eastern culture outside the Middle East. That's what it is. So, you know, Muslim, Islamic, Chaldean, I see a lot and I'm very flattered. So, you know, you have to take those into account too, because it's someone's culture doesn't make it healthy for somebody else. And you can respect cultures, but like you said, you know, in other around the country, oh, I'm a woman, this is what I'm supposed to tolerate. Oh, hell no.
Yes. I can segue that into working with, working with some clients that are in a interracial relationship.
Oh yeah.
There are those religious views and there are those customs and there's that multicultural factor and it still doesn't make it okay because it can be abusive.
No, I respect it. But you have to look at is it abusive if it's, you know, controlling that type of stuff. There's a difference between respecting a view and then standing your ground and what's, you know, what's healthy, what's toxic. Mm-hmm. Have you found in the groups and the research you're doing too, maybe with you, have you found in just like the word narcissist thrown out there like water, have you run into a lot of people, and I know this might piss people off, but this is what I do. Have you run into a lot of people that I've been abused, but they really haven't? Ooh. They claim they've been abused, but it really, in this, like I said, it's a delicate balance. And I get people, Greg, I'm abused. I'm disrespected because my man wouldn't buy me my $1,600 pair of shoes that I wanted. I'm like, what? Disrespected. Did he hit you, verbally bash you, degrade you, belittle you? No. Well, that's not abuse. That's not disrespect.
Right.
And that's where, because there's a lot of people jump on the coattails and bandwagon of these labels and, oh, I'm being abused because you didn't get your way. That's not abuse. Have you run into this a lot?
I haven't seen much of that at all.
Oh, good for you. You're lucky then. Maybe it's just a Midwest thing. No.
I haven't seen that at all. And I mean, I would definitely do like a relational trauma assessment.
Oh, right. Assessment,
like sexual. Sure. And all that, but right. I haven't really run into that much.
Oh wow, you're lucky then. It happened. I'm not gonna say it happens every day, no, but it happens at least a couple times a week.
Yeah, interesting. Well, yeah. Another thing that just came to mind when we were talking about this, is, you know, since this show is all about like sex, love, relationships, and everything in between, this interesting crossover too, like in the world of open polyamory, CNM, like how there are people that are practicing these alternate relationship styles that are also experiencing stuff like this because they're not sticking to the actual like agreement within relationships. And so it comes across as, you know, there it's intermingled everywhere, but like in the realm of CNM.
Hold on. First of all, for people that don't know, can you clue them in what that is?
Consensual non-monogamy.
There you go. I know what it is, but people might not know what it is. Sorry.
Open relationships, polyamory, and then, you know, swinger.
Swinging, yeah.
Whole umbrella of all that. But, like, they're...
And there are differences, people.
Oh, for sure. I mean, monogamy, non-monogamy, and then there.
Well, we're about a lot of people get, you know, open relationships, poly, swinging. They're all different. You know, they're different from one another. And I tell people, even with that issue, a lot of people, oh, that's cheating. It's cheating. No, like you said, Malia, it's if it's consensual and they both agree to it and both, it's not cheating.
Yeah. No. And that's the thing. If it's consensual and there is a healthy agreement as to what is happening in the relationship, that's the foundation for a healthy relationship. But I've only brought this topic up because I also follow that world because I serve those clients as well.
So do I. Absolutely.
And that I'm seeing some of that stuff with the whole emotional abuse, narcissistic abuse over in that realm too. I'm seeing it like in a lot of different areas. So,
and that's why, you know, I have to differentiate, you know, when you do see that abuse, whatever, it's like if one person, and I've had a lot of clients, let's face it, men and women, it doesn't matter on, you know, any gender, let's just face it. Sure. Okay. Any gender, you know, women with vaginas, men with penis, whatever you want to deem it, that they're doing it so they don't lose that other person, but they really don't want a poly situation. They don't want an open relationship, but they'll tolerate it because they love that person. And that's where you set those boundaries and you look at, is it really consensual or is it based on coercion? Or it might not be coercion. It could be just that person's lack of self-respect and self-love because they're fearful of maybe being alone or they really love that person. Great. But it's that trade-off and, you know, it's trying to get congruent with what that person deems as self-love, self-respect, and the life they want to live. Do you run into that? A lot too. Yeah.
So one of my go-to books is, you know, I've seen clients that are monogamous and wanting to explore and open up their relationship. So I definitely start with the two books, Attached and Polysecure. Mm-hmm. Like, read those books. It's just, you need to read them.
Cool.
Before we can start to have these conversations, because really, if you haven't been in an open or polyamorous relationship and you've been in monogamy for a long time, you're opening Pandora's box and you don't know what's going to come up for you. But it can be risky, but it's like if you're both on board to try it.
And there's excitement.
Yeah, there's excitement. And I've seen it work and I've seen it not work.
And there's
different. I get asked the question like, what's normal or what do you see in other people? And I'm like, you can't look at it or compare it. It's the couple that's choosing to try this out. Every situation and every relationship is going to be different. And then take that back even more. Your relationship with yourself.
Thank you.
Is going to be different too.
And it's one thing I tell people, and it's a great resource, the book. And I tell people also, it's one thing that you know, people want to try it, but you can't untry it. You can't untry it. And I run into people that are totally against it, but they'll begrudgingly do it. And, oh, yeah, I actually love this. And then the person that wants it and loves it, I don't want to do this no more. It's funny how I tell people, you can think and lay out groundwork, but don't know until it happens. And that's just, and you know, the consequences, and I'm all about this could, you know, consequences. I want you prepared, but in reality, you don't know until it happens.
Yeah. That's why
you gotta be ready for
walks.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Do you find that in Texas? And I know we were talking before I went live and, you know, I had an issue with the timing and stuff. I went late, but in Texas, I know it's very conservative, a lot of stuff going on there. How do you address, How is that looked at in Texas, in a very, in a conservative state, if you will? How is that looked on there as far as people being ashamed, being degraded in that area, or being poly or having an open relationship or being, you know, swingers?
Right. So I grew up in West Texas in Lubbock, and then I moved to Austin, where it's like complete night and day.
Oh yeah. It's a big difference. Yeah.
Just do your thing there. And so it's very different in Austin, Texas versus like say Dallas or Houston. Houston's like a big melting pot too, but you know, it just varies across the state. But you know, for example, in Lubbock, there's like an under, I would say there's a extensive swinger community here, but it's really underground. Like the swinger clubs here.
Now, I got, are you part of it? Is that how you know?
No, I'm teasing.
Are you blushing right now?
No, I am monogamous. In my
relationship. I'm monogamous too.
I have colleagues that also, I have a few colleagues here that work in that realm with the same clientele. And so I want to be educated. I want to know places where to send my clients. Like, I mean, I would totally go to be a fly on the wall, but I'm just like,
You're holding back a little bit. I don't think you're being totally honest about it. No, I'm teasing. No, it's not for me either. I'm open. I can talk about anything, you know, clients, everything. It's just not me. It's not how I'm made.
Mm-hmm. Same. But I want to be inclusive, and I want to be supportive for all the clients that walk through the door that are needing that support. And if that is their realm and that's what they're wanting to seek out, then I want to be educated and have the resources to help them in their process.
Malia, that is awesome. And I tell people, it's not, no one ever, and this is one thing, because there's people, Malia knows this, I know this, and it shouldn't happen. There's a lot of people in the profession that are biased, that are judgmental, that because of how they follow their religious beliefs or whatever, or their own personal beliefs, that want people, they'll shame people. And there's a lot of bias and a lot of judgment thrown on certain people and how you live your life. And I tell people, it pisses me off, and it's unethical and it's unprofessional. And it's about my philosophy. And I know Malia's is as well. It's about how you want to be, not how I want you to be, how other professionals want you to be. If they want you to be something you're not, or they're biased, judgmental, you need to run out of their office. Don't get out of their office. Run the hell out of their office.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You need a safe environment, big time. This is a very, I'm huge on, it's about the people we serve. You know, it's about our clients, about the people we serve. Mm-hmm. And it's huge. And in these areas, when it comes into even, you know, like cheating, right? You know, how you look at that, and that's one of my prime areas in looking at, you know, the bias and the judgment and the myths out there. And you have other therapists, once a cheater, always a cheater. So you need to dump her. I'm like, and I visited some of these therapists over the years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I wasn't too nice. But it's wrong, you know. So you want to make sure you get the correct advice and information that, you know, Malia's talking about, you know, even with poly, swinger, and look at what's going on. Somebody that's open to talk, and that's not going to shut you down when it comes to sex or any relationship topic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's a lot of relational betrayal recovery that's happening in our world right now. But what I'm interested in is betrayal prevention. And this is where like I get inspired from Brené Brown and people like Glennon Doyle, like how can we have these harder conversations? And that is what happens in the therapy room when we're working with couples, is like, you know, desire discrepancy. One person isn't in the same place as the other person. How can we talk about it? How can we find some sort of resolution versus one person just getting up and like going out?
Yep. What is your view on desire discrepancy?
what is my view on it?
I know I'm calling you out. No, I mean, I don't, I'm not trying to be.
I have this window.
I know what my view is. And I'll tell people my view. I'm open with it. But what's your view on
design? Yeah.
I tell people, even for us, you know, like I said, I've been doing, and there's people that have been doing this longer. I've been doing this 20, 21 years, and there's people doing it longer, but they suck. Okay. So, but I look at desire discrepancy. You want me to tell you my view first?
Sure.
Okay. My view is you're going to have people with anything that will tell you to compromise on everything. You can't. You will be miserable. And people that are listening, watching, or will watch it later, they know this. I've been talking about this for years. You can't compromise on everything. You're going to be miserable.
Yeah.
So if you have somebody that is, they want sex 6-7 days a week, and it's not always the man. No, 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 hell no. And the other one wants it once every 5 or 6 months. I tell people, how do you compromise on that?
Yeah, that's
you a can't. Tough one. You're both going to be miserable because you're both doing something you don't want to do. You know, now if it's 6 times a week, the other one wants it once or twice, you got some room to move a little bit. And we know, you know, illness and death, you know, grief and, you know, trauma going through stuff. We know stuff happens. But if that's the person you are, it's like, how do you compromise? Someone wants a babe and wants a kid. The other one doesn't. And you love each other and it's like, I get it. Good people. You love each other and you're hoping the other one changes their mind down the road and they don't.
Yeah. That's a tough one.
So that when it comes, and that is one of the hardest things to deal with as a professional is desire discrepancy. I'm going to be honest, you know, it's, you know, looking at what's going on. Is it physical, medical issues? Is it emotional? Is it an individual issue? Is it a couple issue? So I look at a holistic view of it. And what is your belief on desire discrepancy?
I mean, you
can disagree with me, please.
Yeah. You brought up two really real and complex.
Oh, it is.
Situations.
Yes.
And, you know, I think it is meeting the couple where they're at, what they are open to, what are their hard yeses, what are their hard nos, like exploring everything and understanding that, like, you might not come to that compromise, but how can you? Yeah, it's interesting because it can be really complex.
And it's not, it's looking at, and again, this comes down to, I tell people when you, hey, Jason, thanks for joining me and Malia on here. Hey, what's going on, man? He just joined in chat. So it's I don't know where everybody is. If they're having lunch, you should be watching us, damn it. But no, it's looking at, I tell people when you sell out the essence of who you are, you're going to be miserable. And you might be okay with it for a while. It's just a matter of time before that tolerance ends. And it's hard. And there's always been the belief that, oh, well, you should stay together and, you know, work things out and nothing's perfect. I understand that. But there's a difference between nothing's perfect and people selling out the essence of who they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's difficult. You're right. Mm-hmm. And you talk about when that comes down, you know, if they're, you know, been together for a while, kids, finances, friends, family. It's all, like you said, it's very complex.
Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where, you know, I kind of had, well, I went on a trip. This sounds random, but I went on a trip to Big Bend. Do you know
tell people where Big Bend is? They might not know.
Big Bend is like very close to Mexico. It is a ginormous park. And it's the desert. And
I heard, yeah.
Me and my partner, we went off-roading for like 2 days, like spent time in the truck just off-roading. And I was so inspired by the beauty of the desert. And that's kind of where I came up with the name for my private practice.
I was going to wilding. Everybody's like, woohoo, orgies fest, right? No.
I look at the cactus and I look towards like my, I don't know, my spiritual practice is basically nature, going to nature, looking
yeah, sure.
rewilding in nature, getting away from the vortex and the matrix that we live in and we have to function in. But that's where I go to get inspired. And I'm going to circle this back to desire discrepancy. And I was inspired by nature to name my business Rewilding Relationships, because we can't continue to do things how we've always done things.
No.
You know, and this is where I like to ask clients, like, okay, define sex for me. Define intimacy for me. Mm-hmm. Like, what does that mean to you? Because they
might have
totally different definitions of that.
Yes.
And maybe it's not an option for you to have sex or intercourse or however you define that 6 times a week. But what are some other things that you can do? Mm-hmm. So I like to be resourceful. I like to be curious.
You have to be.
Yeah. Just drawing from like this. All the C's in internal family systems, just like, how can you be curious? How can you be compassionate? How can you be what are other ways? Like, what are other ways? I like to brainstorm and get creative and get the clients thinking about, okay, it just doesn't have to be this. Can it be something different?
And that's great. And that's terrific. And I tell people, you know, that's been thrown out there forever, right? And I tell people, and that's great. Is there other ways? And I ask people, how do you like to connect? You know, when do you feel, and I ask, you know, when do you feel the most connected? I'll ask both of them. And I said, that doesn't mean it's the same for both of you. It could be different, right? But it's learning that. And it's about ebb and flow. Can you have that give and take, that ebb and flow? And if it's at total opposites, like, throw it out there. One loves giving and receiving oral sex.
Mm-hmm.
No pun intended. Okay, I'll throw myself out there. And the other one, the partner or whatever, hates it. Yeah. Number one, I'm like, what made you last so long? Number one. And they're thinking the other one, again, is going to change their mind. Mm-hmm. And then you look at, okay, why do you hate it? Why do you love it? Why do you, you know, whatever. And it's not a right or wrong. Not at all. Mm-hmm. It's just a difference. But then you, like Malia said, about educating and about going after the curiosity. Why do you hate it? Why do you, you know, what do you think? It's gross. It's sick. It's whatever. Does it make you feel even maybe that you're losing all your power if someone does something to you like that? Mm-hmm. It's, you know, going after curiosity. And it comes down to it, though, if that person does not like a certain thing or doesn't ever change their mind if they want a kid or, you know, try to increase sex or whatever, it's, you got to respect that as a professional. And that's where it's very difficult for relationships and, you know, in us in the field, because that relationship might not last.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's no guarantee in that.
No,
but there is, couples come to couples therapy, or relationship therapy, usually in crisis mode when it doesn't
really,
it doesn't,
I'm being a smart
I still can't wrap my head around that. Like I'm so inspired by the couples that come and do maintenance work. Yeah. They're committed, they're invested in their relationship and they mm-hmm. work through the hard things together. And they, you know, it's, I guess what Stan Tack can call, you know, staying in that couple bubble and figuring out how we can maintain that, which is what you're talking about, maintaining connection.
It's in Malia, like you, I get maybe 10% of my couples are in that parameter. 90% are in crisis. And I wish people would get help before it comes, but I tell people, it's almost like, I don't mean any disrespect to anybody. Okay. So a substance abuse is bad. It's like, everyone's heard this, right? They need to hit rock bottom before they actually get help. And I tell people sometimes that crisis mode is that couple's rock bottom. So I understand it. I get mm-hmm. it. I wish it didn't happen, but that's the analogy I use in, you know, the cheating episode or whatever it is, the arguments, yelling, screaming, physical altercations, that it's that relationship's rock bottom. Now, what do we do with that? Mm-hmm. You know, so it's, yeah, you're right. It's not, you know, coming in, Greg, you need an appointment right away.
Right.
Right away. Like maybe 2 weeks from now, is that right away? You know, because we get booked, we get, right?
Yeah. And I really feel for parents and families these days, because it's parenting in a whole different world than what it used to be. It's these kids growing up and these teens, it's a whole different breed. and so I understand.
It's just different. Just like, well, I'm old. My parents, you know, how we grow, you know, we all hear this. Well, when I grew up, like you said, relationship, it evolves, it grows, it's whatever. And can you be okay with that? It's not supposed to be how we grew up or how it used to be, because people, the world evolves and grows. I would hope so, right? Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously adapting to the world around us is what we have to do. And in doing so, like what I see a lot is, like work, kids, parents, like it's like
taking care of us, elderly parents, sick parents. It's stuff. Yeah. It's stuff that's been going on. And like technology tends to grab our connection. It's like our brain is all over the place and we have a hard time centering and focusing anymore.
Right. And it's like, okay, who knows how we were trained in investing and what to invest in ourselves, how to invest in finances, how to invest. We weren't ever taught, or I wasn't ever taught, like invest in relationships. Relationships are everything. It's like,
good mom, be a good dad, be a, right?
You know, right? But it's like, I think
it just happens.
It gets in the back burner because you all of a sudden find yourself in the hamster wheel of raising children and maintaining a job. And then it's like, you don't put your relationship at the forefront. And that's so, and I tie this into parenting because parenting is the most important job on the planet, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yes, because I agree.
You're raising human beings to live and thrive and be in the world and function together.
And if it's a situation where, you know, you live together, decided to have a kid or two or 20, crazy, but anyway, it's not my thing. And, or you get married, decide to have a kid or two, whatever. Mm-hmm. I tell people, you know, everybody says, oh, the kids are number one. I tell people, if the kids remain number one all the time, that relationship will not last. Mm-hmm. You gotta have, and step families are totally different. Mm-hmm. That's a totally different ball game. Mm-hmm. But looking at, you gotta also, you know, and it's hard. It's not easy, because what brought those kids into this world are you two. Mm-hmm. So
and how do you your relationship?
How do you make that a priority? Right.
Yeah.
So, I'm sorry. We have to go, or I have to go. And Malia, please let people know. And you can find it on Facebook, YouTube. I have links all over. I'll be posting them later on Instagram and all over social media as well. And your app. Yeah. You're in all. Yeah. Your app. And we'll have to talk about who did it for you, or if you did it, or you did it. Terrific.
Yeah. So I'll post that up there if anybody needs that. It's a free web app with psychological.
Awesome. Please. Where can people find you again? Your website.
My website's rewildingrelationships.com. I'm located in Texas. And I see clients virtually in Texas and then also in person here in Lubbock. And then I also have coaching clients across the country. So
cool.
Work in both realms. Yeah. It's been great.
And I laugh because I rip apart a lot of people that throw themselves out there as coaches, life coaches, whatever. They don't have the training, education. They just throw a label on it. But with coaching, it comes with us when we do coaching. It comes from a very, let's face it, educated training background. There's a huge difference. Plus, let's be real, when we are coaching, we get to go across state lines. Mm-hmm. Let's be honest.
And that's the other thing. And I hope,
let's be honest,
there's a lot of work right now pushing towards therapy being able to cross the state line. So I'm following that really closely.
And absolutely.
Because there's some antiquated structures in the realm of therapy, and it's time to innovate and like make some change.
Get up. So Malia, thank you so much.
You're welcome. It was nice to meet you.
Oh, it's awesome. And we'll do this again. I'm sure if you want to, we'll see. I don't want to assume, but thank you so much. And like I said, I'll be sharing more of your information as well out there on social media. Thank you. And I'm going to say goodbye now. And hey, everybody. Thank you so much for, you know, some great information, great resources from Malia as well. Like I said, she is, you know, working on sex therapy, associate's license. I've been fully licensed for a long time. Like I said, I've been doing this for 21 years now. And you can check me out, theartofrelationships.org is my website. You can check me out, social media, YouTube, Facebook. Please follow me. You can follow Malia out there on her resources as well under Love Guru Greg. And the audio version of the show is always available under the Art of Relationships show on every listening platform as well. So everybody, take care, peace and love. And my gratitude again for you viewing the show, watching the show. I mean that from the bottom of my heart. Thank you so much. I'm very flattered and humbled for you to spend your time, because your time is valuable. And my passion has always been, always will be, to help you have that relationship you've always craved, not only with a partner or partners, but also with yourself. Okay. So peace and love out there. Bye-bye.